Hey everybody, J-Rock Rude here, and once again, another reminder that if you want more rocking review content, you can follow us on both X and Instagram. That's right, X and Instagram at The Rocking Review. That is R-A-W-K-I-N-G. And a big announcement, we are officially on Apple Podcasts. That's right, you can now view us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our Castros website at the-rocking-review.castros. That's C-A-S-T-O-S, castros.com. And if you follow us on either Apple Podcasts or Spotify, you can click that notification and follow us to get more content and also be aware of every single time we drop a brand new episode. So once again, you can catch us on X and Instagram at The Rocking Review, as well as Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and our Castros website at the-rocking-review.castros.com. Thank you very much. And always remember, it's spelled R-A-W-K because we talk about the W's in pro wrestling. Now, on with the show.
The Rocking Review Podcast, hosted by J. Rock Rude.
Disclaimer, unfortunately, due to audio and tech qualities, the performance and quality of this episode is unfortunately not up to date and not up to par with what standards should be. I apologize, and things will be better in the future. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to part two of episode 14 of The Rocking Review Podcast. My name is J-Rock Root, and today we are continuing with part two of our WrestleMania 41 review, and this will be on night number two that happened on Sunday, Easter Sunday, no less. But a quick note, at the start of this episode, both my guest, Lucas McGarry, and Mike Neckers, unfortunately, due to time constraints, after the very first match, all of the review will be made solely by me. This is nothing against them. There was just a bit of time constraints that ended up happening. So unfortunately, I'm writing solo for the rest after the first match that we go over. But until then, until you hear my voice again, just me, sit back, relax, and thank you very much for listening to part two of WrestleMania Night 1. Now, let's get in to Night 2 of WrestleMania. So now kicking off part two, we have night two, and we opened up with the Women's World Championship between Io Sky, Bianca Belair, and Rhea Ripley. And Bianca came out second after Io. Io got no special entrance.
Yeah, I was a little disappointed about that. I feel like Io should have gotten something. I mean, her standard entrance is just great already, but I don't know. I would have rather she got something like special. I mean, she's the champ coming into Mania, but it's whatever.
One of the cool things that I realized and I didn't even know about in Bianca Belair's entrance is she has a stepdaughter.
Yeah, is that Montez's kid?
Apparently, it must be Montez's kid. Like that's insane. I didn't even know that. Because, like, you know, usually with, you know, women in the, you know, wrestling business, they're not like, you know, normal athletes who can, like, you know, go and take a break. So it's very hard for, like, those type of wrestlers to end up starting a life where they end up having, you know, their own kids. So I was very taken away. And also, she looked very older. So she's got to be in, like, what, her teens probably?
Yeah.
From, like, what she looked like. So that was crazy to see. And then Rhea came out. Big pop for Rhea. Nobody's more over than Rhea in that women's division. You know, I don't care where you're from. I don't care where, you know, if you're, you know, that loaded roster in NXT, you are not bigger than freaking Rhea Mommy Ripley. Mm-hmm. But as soon as the bell rang, most of the focus was on Io Sky. She countered by grabbing both of Bianca and Rhea's hands and striking first. Blair gained momentum with some corner strikes on both opponents, but Io ducked under and yanked Belair down by her hair. Io then followed up with a double-legged blockbuster-style move and then soared outside with an acai moonsault. Belair then regained control and delivered the rolling vertical suplexes, ending with a delayed suplex. On the outside, Belair caught Io's dive, but Ripley joined in and slammed Io into the barricade. Back inside, Ripley delivered Razor's Edge to Io into Belair for a near fall, followed by locking in the Prism Trap. Belair interrupted with a KOD attempt. She looked like she was going to try to, like, lift Rhea while Rhea was locking in on Io Sky, the Prism Trap. So it looked like basically Io Sky was going to be, like, on top of Rhea. And meanwhile, like, laying on top of Rhea, Rhea was on the shoulders of Bianca. I thought that could have been a cool move, but of course, Io slipped out. All three then climbed the turnbuckles where Belair executed a big double superplex. I mean, Io completely flipped back head first onto the canvas. I thought that was a pretty good spot.
Yeah, I mean, I'm just glad she was okay.
Oh, 100%. Pretty gnarly. Oh, yeah, completely flipped all the way back around. Io came back with a springboard dropkick, but Belair speared her and connected with a 450 splash for two. Ripley answered with a riptide, but Io reversed the second riptide in with DDT. I always love that counter when anybody goes up for the riptide, when she goes up and then immediately turn around into a DDT. I think that's pretty good. Rhea responded with a kick to Io and then lifted her up for an avalanche riptide, which Io countered midair into a crucifix bomb for two. Io then tried for a moonsault, but Ripley kicked her when she was in the middle of it and pounced on her into a KOD from Belair. Belair broke up the pin just in time, though. A strike exchange led to Belair and Ripley on the top rope. Ripley knocked Belair down and then blocked a Poison Rana attempt from Io and slammed her into the post. That was a dangerous spot. Almost the reversed power bomb setup, the face buster, where they basically just, like, send you, you know, face down. And she went face down into this post and was knocked out completely. As soon as Ripley came down, Belair attempted for the KOD on Ripley, who landed on her feet, but Ripley delivered a headbutt. She delivered the second attempt of the KOD onto Ripley, but just as she went to make the cover, Io hits the moonsault to break up the pin and immediately covered Belair. And 1, 2, 3, Io Sky retains the Women's World Championship match. Again, this is one of the many patterns that were seen for night two. Every match was pretty much a banger. What did y'all think about this triple threat match?
I mean, you put three of the best wrestlers in the WWE together for a match, and then no one should be surprised when you get a really good match out of it. And in my opinion, I think the right person won. Bianca and Rhea are both true stars. I don't think Bianca needs this because this is going to push her more towards a potential heel turn, which I will continue to deny happening until it actually happens, because I still think WWE is under the mind that she's too big of a face to ever turn her heel. But with Rhea also being as big of a face as her, I think it's more possible than I used to think, at least. But overall, Io is just as big of a star as them at this point, in my opinion. She is such a good wrestler. Unfortunately, she doesn't speak that good of English, so there's a problem with her mic skills. But honestly, I'm really happy with this outcome and where they're going to go, because all three of them have really, really good futures.
Well, let's talk about also the Raw after Mania. Io Sky did come out, and she was answered, believe it or not, by the NXT champion, Stephanie Vecchio. They ended up having a one-on-one match. Unfortunately, it ended in DQ because of interference by Roxanne Perez. And immediately after Io tried to retaliate on Roxanne, all of a sudden, Julia then came out as well. Io and Stephanie were saved by the Eradicator, Rhea Ripley, and Rhea tossed both women out, and she teased that she would be next in line to finally get another rematch for Io's championship. So that was the story after Raw after Mania.
Hello there again, it is me. So, let's get right back in with the rest of the review. We then had the Sin City street fight between Drew McIntyre and Damian Priest. Drew came out in a sort of Doom attire. Meanwhile, Damian came out with the lead guitarist from the metal band Slayer. So I thought both of the entrances were pretty cool. The action began before the bell rang as Drew McIntyre attacked Priest, sending the fight to the outside. Drew superplexed Priest on the ramp, but Priest grabbed some steel steps and swung them into McIntyre to gain control and then introduced a table into the ring. Drew responded by using the steps himself, and then he ran over to his brother that was seen wearing a McIntyre soccer jersey, and he grabbed his phone, and just like he did last year, texted "still bored at work, LOL," just like he did last year in the match that he had opening night 2 with Seth Rollins for the World Heavyweight Championship, which of course this entire feud was built around, essentially Drew McIntyre being screwed by Damian Priest, cashing in on him last year and winning the World Heavyweight Championship, of course, after the interference with CM Punk. Priest stopped the Claymore with a chair throw, but Drew powered through and hit the Claymore anyway for a near fall. He then set up two tables outside of the ring, and then from the other side, he did a dive. He succeeded with a toe-pick on Hilo, which by far was, it's just incredible seeing Drew McIntyre move like he does, taking that big dive over the ropes and then just landing right on nearly his feet. So I thought that was a pretty good spot. Priest stopped a Claymore with a chair throw, but Drew powered through and hit the Claymore anyway. McIntyre then wrapped a chair around Priest's neck and went to do another Claymore, but Priest got him up with almost a variation of the South of Heaven chokeslam, but it was just a normal chokeslam with one arm. Priest then took control with the chair beat down and then wedged it in the corner. Drew then hit a spine buster and attempted White Noise off the ropes, but Priest escaped and then delivered the Razor's Edge through the table. Drew still kicked out. Priest then tried to do South of Heaven on the steps, but Drew raked the eyes and delivered the Future Shock DDT on the steps for another near fall. Both men brawled with chops and slaps, and it ended with Drew landing a headbutt and Priest rebounding with a big lariat. Priest then tried walking the ropes, but was shoved to the outside on the double tables. Drew then lined up for one final Claymore with a chair wedged in the corner. Priest didn't move. The Claymore connected flush, and Drew picked up the win. 1, 2, 3. I thought this match did very well. Again, a banger after the triple threat match. And again, Drew gets his win back over Damian Priest, and now probably will be starting his run toward trying to get the world championship back in his grasp. But so overall, really great match. We then had this match. Randy Orton's open challenge. If Mike Neckers was here doing this match, covering this match, he would be raising his fist to the air because he did call that this was going to happen. I thought we were going to get Rusev, which of course, as we now know, Raw after Mania, Rusev did return. He came out, attacked the Alpha Academy. So it was not Rusev. But before anybody could come out, Randy got on the mic. He says that any man with the guts to step up, they would fall to the three dangerous letters in professional wrestling, RKO. A long pause is given. We get a shot of the entranceway. And kind of similar to like Gunther's entrance, we see the doors open up. And as soon as they open up, Joe Hendry is there. Say his name and he appears. Joe Hendry becomes the first active TNA champion to walk into WrestleMania and have a match. I honestly could not believe it. But again, I have my comments on Joe Hendry. I just don't believe that Joe Hendry is a good performer. I believe that he has good charisma and he has amazing mic skills. But as far as his in-ring work, I don't think that it is that revolutionary and that good of any other professional wrestler. As soon as the bell rang, Orton went straight for the RKO, but Hendry reversed into a tight roll-up for almost a near fall. He sees momentum with a quick setup for the standing ovation, but Orton raked the eyes to stop the sequence from happening. Orton followed up with a snap power slam and then hit his signature draping DDT. Another RKO attempt came next, but Hendry escaped and delivered his fall-away slam called the Freak of Nature before popping back up, and then he did the spin taunt. But of course, as soon as he did that, Orton waits, and in mid-spin, hits the RKO out of nowhere. 1, 2, 3. Match is done. Pretty much 3 minutes in and out. Buried. Post-match, Orton lifts Hendry's hand up in a show of respect, and then, of course, delivers another RKO, and he paused for a moment. I thought that he was going to do the putt kick. I was like, oh my god, if he putt kicks Joe Hendry, I'm going to be so happy right now. But instead of doing the, you know, the RKO pose where he turns around, he spins around and does the Orton pose, and then walks off. I'm not going to say that it was a complete waste of Orton's match at Mania. It's really in the stance of, you know, what can you honestly ask for as far as you got what you wanted, which was Randy Orton having a match at WrestleMania. Unfortunately, it was not against the opponent that we were hoping for, which would have been Kevin Owens, which would have been an absolute amazing brawl that would have ended in that signature punt kick returning. But overall, it was a 3-minute match. It was pretty much nothing. We then moved on to Logan Paul versus AJ Styles. This feud only has been built up a few times, but of course, Paul needed a big money match after being one of the final three in the Royal Rumble this year. So they knew that he needed to be part of WrestleMania, and AJ Styles, who has been off and on with injuries, finally coming back, doing what he did, and now having this feud with Paul, it was pretty great. But again, he was like, the new superstar coming in, because he's only been in the business for about only like 3 years. He's had under 8 matches under his belt, as far as like singles matches would go. But, still very good that, Paul continues to proceed and exceed expectations in his career in professional wrestling. Logan Paul's entrance came in with drone cams. They came in with like 9 different angles of Paul making his way to the ring. And he just, he had that swagger. He's humble. Of course, Styles goes to the ring. Traditional lockup, open the start of the match. But of course, Styles was soon dumped to the outside. Logan attempted a plancha, but AJ snatched him in the apron curtain. I thought this was actually kind of cool. He went to go dive, like do a drop kick through the ropes, but in the middle of it, AJ pulled the ring apron out and caught Paul in the apron and just started wailing on him. I thought that was a really nice veteran tactic, of course, shades of Fit Finlay. Back inside, Logan riled back, slamming AJ into the post and successfully landed another plancha, followed by a drone toss and a frog splash to Styles. So he caught the drone and then flew it back up in the air. Momentum stayed with Logan, who delivered a moonsault But AJ suddenly caught and steadied him mid-air to protect the spot. Adrian encountered a whip into a brainbuster for two. He went for a Styles Clash, but Logan reversed it mid-air, followed with a rolling senton and a lion salt. Styles then recovered and attempted a springboard 450, but then landed on Logan's knees. Logan went to hit the Styles Clash himself. He hits the Styles Clash. AJ almost no-sells it and then hits his Styles Clash. Then Jeff from Logan's entourage, who has showed up almost for every single Logan Paul match, tried to give him the signature brass knucks, but out of nowhere, Karrion Kross intercepts the brass knucks. Of course, AJ Styles tosses Jeff away, and Karrion is looking at AJ like, you gotta use this. And for weeks, AJ and Kross have been having these like backstage segments where Kross is begging AJ to get into that old style, that old AJ Styles that would just absolutely be dirty and gritty, and he would do anything to win. And Kross has been trying to turn him to that dark side. AJ has been refusing, and he tries to give AJ the brass knuckles. AJ takes the brass knuckles, he throws them away, turns around, and gloves Kross. But as soon as he gets back into the ring, AJ misses the phenomenal forearm. Logan punches him with the one punch KO. And then he delivers the pulverizer for the 1-2-3. And Logan Paul wins his second match in a row at WrestleMania. I believe the record for Logan Paul currently is now 3-1 at WrestleMania. His only losses coming at the hands of Roman Reigns, LA Knight, and Seth Rollins. Those are the only losses that Logan Paul has had in his career in far as singles matches go. It is absolutely incredible to see how Logan has done this. And I'm not a big Logan Paul supporter. I'm just saying this in perspective of Logan Paul has came into his own. And Logan Paul is going to, of course, surprise all the doubters as much as he wants. So, really good for him. We had our semi-main event. Now, if you remember from part one, we mentioned that Bayley was taken out during the pre-show of night one. So, Lyra Valkyria, the women's Intercontinental Champion, had to find a replacement in less than 24 hours. As Morgan and Rodriguez went to the ring, Valkyria came out and she came through with like these like wings, I guess, because she's the bird lady. And then she got all the way to the ring, and then we waited for who was her surprise partner. And just the same way that they did with Joe Hendry, they opened the doors, and I called this. I knew Becky was returning. And apparently the Dirt Sheet reporters were not quick to know anything about this at all, which I was very surprised. I would have been thinking that they would have been reporting that, oh, Becky Lynch has been reported to be returning soon. I just knew she was going to return at Mania. Now, depending on where she goes after Mania, of course, is the question. But Becky Lynch came to the ring. Liv, of course, started panicking. Because, of course, Liv was the last person to beat Becky Lynch before she went on her almost year-long hiatus. Liv bailed at the bell, tagging in Raquel. Becky slapped Raquel across the face, but Liv shoved her off the top rope and into a vicious boot from Raquel. Lyra was in the ring. The champs isolated her, tagging in and out, doing methodical beatdowns. Liv hit the Three Amigos and then mocked Becky. Quick hot tag was denied by Liv after she pulled Becky off the apron, only for Becky to chase her and get booted by Raquel. Eventually, Lyra did tag back out to Bayley. Bayley exploded into the match with Bexploders, a springboard leg drop, and then a disarmer on Liv. Raquel broke the hold with a boot, and Liv hit Oblivion. But Lyra came in and broke up the pin. Outside, Lyra reversed Raquel's catch into a DDT on the floor. Back inside, Becky would hit the manhandle slam on Liv and pin her 1-2-3 to become the new women's tag team champions. And, of course, Lyra would be a double champion, still holding on to the women's intercontinental title. Again, not that much to say. Only big pop, of course, was Becky Lynch's return. This was her second return after a long break from wrestling. She did it the first time back in 2022 in Allegiant Stadium. No, scratch that, 2021. Forgive me. 2021 Allegiant Stadium at SummerSlam when she absolutely buried Bianca Belair in under 23 seconds to win the SmackDown Women's Championship. But of course, as we know, this tag championship run did not last long because, of course, the next night on Raw, they were in an impromptu match, a rematch with Liv Morgan and Raquel Rodriguez. Becky was distracted by Raquel on the outside, and Lyra got caught up in the oblivion as Liv pinned Lyra and won back the women's tag championships. So technically, Raw after Mania, there was still lots of gold in Judgment Day still. And then after the match, Becky and Lyra were still in the ring and fed up. Becky shoved Lyra and clotheslined her and kept on coming back in to hit her, kick her, and then finally delivered three manhandle slams in a row to Lyra Valkyria. So pretty much setting up their feud going into Backlash in St. Louis, where we're probably going to see Becky Lynch versus Lyra Valkyria for the Women's Intercontinental Championship. We finally got to the main event. I know this sounds like a very quick episode. My apologies. But it's much different when you have another person that you can feedback off of their thoughts. Cody Rhodes versus John Cena for the undisputed WWE Championship. Cena came out first, and for his last WrestleMania ever, he came out basically with nothing. I'm not saying that he came out naked like he did for the Oscars. He came out basically black hat, black tee, the towel behind his head. He, on his entrance, on his Titantron, it was just... It was kind of like similar to like Gunther's first Titantron and his first entrance, where it was just, you know, Imperium, or it was like Gunther and it was just black and white. This one was just a normal black background with a white text saying John Cena, and that was it. Spotlight on him walking all the way down the ramp, just being cocky. And this is exactly what, and this is what I'll say every single time for this John Cena run, this last run. For his heel run, he knew what he wanted to do, and what he wanted to do was to basically do the opposite. So the fans get no fanfare. The fans not going to get anything special. They're just going to get a plain old vanilla entrance for his last WrestleMania, and he's going to walk down. Meanwhile, Cody Rhodes came in, super chauvinistic, had this big loaded entrance, dirt bikes going back and forth, people with the nightmare vest on, and then he comes up from the, what is now the dubbed Cody Vader, and he has a mask similar to what he's wore the last couple of big matches. I believe the last time he ever used this mask was, I believe, SummerSlam recently with Solo Sikoa. But this one was different because the mask opened up like Iron Man on its own. So a full mechanical mask, him just wearing, opened up like he was Iron Man. So proving that he was the Captain America, he was the Iron Man, he was the quarterback for this new WWE.
The match started out with some simple grappling.
It was just relatively super slow. Just very, very slow. A lot of work holds. Cena constantly would go out to the ring. Cody went for a suicida. He got it. Dragged Cena back to the ropes. But Cena immediately capitalized, hitting a big punch, and then doing a little bit of some headlocks. Cena delivered a cheap shot over the ref and then hit some stomps to Cody. It's weird like how he delivered the stomps. Also, another thing that was confirmed, that Cena has actually gotten some hair transplants. He did make mention of this. He said that they bullied him into getting a hair transplant, and it's actually working. Cena landed a big boot to Cody, continued with his assault to Cody with some kicks. Back and forth elbows from Cody and Cena. Cena then hit a big lariat that turned Cody inside out, only got a two. And then another sleeper headlock, which, again, this is why a lot of people had the criticism that they had for this match, because it just was super slow. It was something that we had not seen in such a long time, and for the fact that it's a main event of WrestleMania, it just sucked. Cody went off the ropes, but was met by a sidewalk slam from Cena. Cena then delivered the Axe Bomber from the top, and just absolutely glommed Cody on the top turnbuckle, and then he just sat up there and waited. He just sat up there and just waited and delivered another Axe Bomber to Cody. Like this was just so slow, it was ridiculous. Cody then delivered a gut kick on Cena's way down. He delivered the punches to Cena, but in the last part, Cena did the eye poke, and this began raining down strikes on Cody. It looked so shit. I'm sorry to say that. It looked so bad. The crowd began cheering for Cody. Cena, whipped into the corner by Cody, delivered a tornado DDT. They got another near fall. Cena then waited and delivered his shoulder tackle, but he didn't go into all of his moves at once. That was one of the biggest things. He was slow. He was methodical. He waited. And then he finally delivered his superplex. He took his time with it. Went for the five-knuckle shuffle, but Cody dodged it and then delivered a power slam followed by a dropkick. Cody then hit the Cody cutter, but it only got a two. Cena tried to go for the STF, but Cody kicked him off. But as soon as he got up, Cena delivered the AA, but Cody still kicked out. Cena then delivered the five-knuckle shuffle, went to deliver another AA. Cody went for the sunset roll-up, got a kick out. Cody then, from the top rope, he was on the top rope, but immediately got crotched by Cena. Cena then immediately climbed up and delivered an avalanche AA from the top, 1-2, and still a kick out from Cody. Cena then tried to deliver his leg drop from the top rope, but Cody caught him into a big powerbomb. I thought that was scary. That got a big near fall. Cody then delivered the Cody cutter from the top rope. And then Cena countered again and got Cody into another AA and then immediately locked in the STF. Apparently, commentary, I didn't even hear this, is now calling this back to its original name, the STFU. Cena kept on dragging Cody back to the center of the ring. As Cody was reaching for the ropes on the last attempt, the ref made his way over to the corner and was right behind Cena as Cody pushed Cena off his legs into the ref and off the rebound. Cena went for another AA. Rhodes powered out of it and then delivered the crossroads. But of course, there was no referee to count the pin. Cody then went to check the ref. Cena then, as Cody was distracted, removed the top turnbuckle from one of the turnbuckles, and he conned Cody into going up near the turnbuckle and then threw him into the turnbuckle. Cody hit his head off the exposed turnbuckle. Cena then hit him a second time off the turnbuckle. Cena went for the AA and still 1-2 and a kick out from Cody. And then this is where the finish happened. Fiend starts playing. If it hadn't already played as much as it had that weekend. And all of a sudden, Travis Scott comes out. And I looked at it and I'm like, I don't know if it's, you know, I thought that The Rock was going to come out because that's what happened at Elimination Chamber. But nothing happened. There was no Rock. There was no nothing. Just Travis Scott making his way. And meanwhile, Cena's laughing. And this lasts probably about like 3-4 minutes. He makes it all the way down the ramp. Cody's selling. And Cena dabs up Travis Scott. Gets him on the apron. Scott basically tells Cena to get him up. So Cena is holding Cody. Scott is going to punch him in a match where there are disqualifications. Cody escapes out of it, goes to hit Scott off the ropes. Scott drops from the apron. Cena goes for another AA, but Cody hits the crossroads on Cena. And before the ref can make the count, Travis Scott yanks the official out of the ring. Multiple boos. And immediately, Travis started talking smack with Cody. And of course, if any of you guys remember, Travis Scott was responsible for a black eye and a bruised eardrum for Cody at that Elimination Chamber PLE. When he decided to take liberties and just smack Cody right in the eye. Shoot style. And Travis Scott got into the ring. This guy barely looks over... He barely looks over 150. He talks to smack, goes to hit Cody. Cody catches his arm, delivers the crossroads to Travis Scott, which at least he did that well. Meanwhile, while Cody's pushing Travis Scott out the way, Cena's in the back, and he's got the WWE Championship in his hands. He hits it off of Cody, and he smashes it across his face. Cena grabs the ref, picks him up, goes for the pin, and slow 1-2-3. And John Cena is the brand new, undisputed WWE Championship. And he now has a record-breaking 17 title runs. Breaking Ric Flair's record that has stood pretty much for, I'd have to say, what, 25 years? I think the last time that Flair had it was, what, WCW 2000? Unbelievable. Cena celebrated with Travis Scott. They both held up their championships. And then, of course, Cena walked out, all the fireworks, and he puts the strap on him, puts the belt on him, and he has it backwards. So, basically, he's just walking, and his back's toward the camera, and you can see the championship. Let's follow this up with the Raw after Mania. We kicked off with John Cena. John Cena came out with the exact same entrance. Black Titantron. Bolded letters. Absolutely just nonchalant. The person they have ring announcing does the ring announcing and then follows up with telling the ring announcer to reintroduce him as the last real champion, which I thought was pretty great. Cena then went on the tangent and he said that you guys shouldn't be worried about this title. You guys should be worried about this. And he points to the ramp. And on the Titantron is a list saying 36 dates. And he then goes on and explains that that is the amount of dates that he committed to in 2025 for his last run with the company. It's 36 dates. He went through all of the dates that he had done. So you got the Netflix debut, you had the Royal Rumble, you had the Elimination Chamber, then you had London, Brussels, Glasgow, and then Las Vegas three different times. He was there for SmackDown, he was there for Mania, and he was there for Raw. It came down to 27 dates total. 27 dates, and then he was done, and he was going to retire with the championship, and they were going to have to make a new championship. And he said that everybody should take out their phones, take a picture, because the last real champion is here. And while he was doing that, a certain Viper shows up behind him, hits the RKO, and then holds up the WWE Undisputed Championship, which confirms that in his hometown, Randy Orton is going to have one last match with his greatest rival, John Cena, at Backlash. So I then started to break this down of, okay, he has 27 dates, right? He is currently scheduled for, as of this recording, the 25th of April, and that edition of SmackDown. He then is scheduled for Backlash. He's scheduled for Saturday night's main event. And then he has three SmackDowns. He has May 30th, which is the SmackDown after Saturday night's main event, which will be in, I believe, Kansas City. They have June 13th and June 20th. And they just announced that Money in the Bank will, in fact, be at the Intuit Dome in Los Angeles on June 7th. And, of course, during that weekend, they also will be having the NXT Worlds Collide event with AAA. So that will be the location for that June PLE. So you got the SmackDown probably before that, and then you got the SmackDown after. So I started looking at it and, you know, counting that down. So you got plus tomorrow's date, that's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then he's already going to be for Money in the Bank, so that's 7 dates. So then that's 20 dates. So then you look at all the ones that you have going for the rest of the year. You have SummerSlam, you have Clash in Paris, you have Survivor Series, and you have Perth, which is going to have its own PLE in October. And then probably, let's say, another PLE in December, if they wanted to. So that's like, that's 5 dates right there. So, you know, taking the, you know, 7 dates as we talked about. So you got 5 right there. So then that's 15 dates. That's 15 dates for the PLEs, which leaves a total of 15 dates in the span of the next 8 months. That is technically after May, because then that'll be the 5 months going on. After May, you're pretty much averaging about 2 televised dates on either a SmackDown or a Raw for John Cena. And honestly, I think this is the best thing that they can do. The good thing is, at least you will expect to see John Cena almost either once or twice every single month with his title reign, which is exactly what you were getting before with Roman Reigns when he would take his long hiatuses and he would end up not defending the title, but showing up, cutting some promos, and pretty much that's it. And he talked about that on this promo after Mania, that he was only going to be there to do appearances. He was not going to do matches. His only matches are probably going to be the PLEs. So you got a guarantee about, you know, 7 or so matches with this title run. And of course, that last match being probably where he will drop the title. And the question is who does he drop the title to? As I referenced in part one, I think that as much as this, you know, feud with Punk and Roman and Rollins and Heyman and now Braun Breaker is going to probably slide off into the summer, I believe CM Punk is going to want to get back on Cena, and I think that we're going to see that night 2 main event of SummerSlam at MetLife Stadium be Cena versus Punk, with Heyman aligning himself with Cena, and then that last like couple months it will be like the corporate alliance where it will be like Breaker, Seth, and then whoever else they end up getting along with John Cena. And then, you know, maybe The Rock will show up. But speaking of The Rock, I do want to make note of this beforehand, before we end the segment here, that the entire purpose of The Rock being a part of this storyline was the most ridiculous reason ever. Because the night after the Raw of Mania, it was announced that Pat McAfee, of all people, and for the Raw after Mania, Pat McAfee got choked out by Gunther after Gunther lost his World Heavyweight Championship to Jey Uso. So that will probably set up a match. I don't know if it's going to be Pat versus Gunther, or Pat is going to get somebody to represent himself to face Gunther, which the rumor is currently that that will be Bill Goldberg's last match. That match, I believe, would probably have to be somewhere big, like SummerSlam. But I don't know if we want to put Gunther up to that, you know, that low of a match. And I understand it's going to be his retirement match. And yes, you had the feud and the little segment that they had back in Atlanta back in October at Bad Blood with Gunther and Goldberg. But, you know, still, I don't know if that's a right choice for both Gunther and Goldberg for that to be Goldberg's last match, but it's whatever. But, of course, the night after Raw after Mania, it is announced that The Rock is going to show up on Pat McAfee's podcast. So when we were recording part one of this WrestleMania 41 review, it was revealed, this was the biggest thing coming out of that interview with The Rock. Rock revealed that he showed up at Elimination Chamber because Ari Emanuel called him to help with ticket sales. This entire soul gimmick from The Rock was only because they needed ticket sales for Elimination Chamber. I'm sorry, that is not a reasonable explanation to explain why you basically wanted to take the biggest babyface at that time, being Cody Rhodes, and suggest on making him heel, which that was another thing that he talked about, is he wanted Cody to turn heel organically, and he still thinks that he will turn heel eventually. But please, like, there is no reason. And again, like, there are, you know, his comments of like, this is a work, okay, like, you know, this is not real. But the fact is like, when you are putting storylines on television, you should have a decent payoff, and you should have the people that are there to basically say, yeah, I'm going to be there every week, and we're going to continue on with this storyline, and we are going to make this the best that we can. Last year, with the storyline of WrestleMania 40 and Cody Rhodes versus the Bloodline and versus The Rock was on board all the way. This time around, after he faced Cody, and Cody won the championship off of Roman, The Rock immediately left, showed up at Bad Blood almost for no reason, delivered the three, acting like that was some significance, and then we thought that possibly The Rock was going to show up at the Royal Rumble, but that never happened. And then all of a sudden, it's reported he's going to show up and he's in New Orleans. He shows up to announce WrestleMania 42 at the Caesars Superdome. And then he says that he wants Cody's soul. Says, Elimination Chamber, give me your soul. So then after the main event of Elimination Chamber, Cena wins the chamber, being sneaky. He sides with The Rock and Travis Scott. And The Rock comes on, he goes, well, you know, y'all shouldn't, you know, trust the process. You know, enjoy the ride that everybody's taking you on. No. Give us a decent payoff and not get Travis Scott going out there alone and doing absolutely nothing but making the match worse than it already was. Like, absolutely ridiculous for how this ended up going. But overall, I didn't care that much about the match. It's mostly just about the moment. Number 17. John Cena is a 17-time world champion. He will have that record for as long as time. And I'm okay with that. Because he was an idol to many people. There was also the comments over the weekend about the roast of WrestleMania. I won't get into that as much. The biggest one coming out of that was Paul Heyman. Paul Heyman had a bunch of insanely crazy jokes, including one that involved comedian Gabriel Fluffy Iglesias. And then he followed it up with his appearance on the McAfee show, where he basically talked about, you know, a bunch of stuff. He even talked about the current allegations against ESPN analyst and superstar Shannon Sharp and his lawsuit that's going on right now. And he was just unhinged. And then later that night, he barely said anything on the mic. There was barely even a segment. It was just a beatdown of both Roman and Punk. And then the introduction of Breaker to the New Dangerous Alliance, but man, like, this main event was absolutely ridiculous. But that is it for our podcast, and that is it for this episode of The Rocking Review. I want to thank you so much. Of course, this is part two of our WrestleMania 41 review, and it is part two of our review that is up now on YouTube. That is right. Username WNYO88.9FM3 is where you can find our brand new YouTube channel with our part one review of WrestleMania up now. With all that being said, thank you very much for listening. And as always, it's spelled R-A-W-K because we talk about the W's in pro wrestling. Thank you, everybody. We'll be right back.